Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. First on the docket, a mayor in New York is charged with possession of crack cocaine. Second, Ghislaine Maxwell wants to go home. She doesn't like it in custody. Third, the two tall bandit strikes again. Fourth, Kyle Rittenhouse appears in court for a preliminary hearing. Fifth, the Pocahontas star arrested twice in 3 days. You can't go to church naked. Next, an example of anything you say can and will be used against you. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for tuning in. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And as always, please leave a comment below. First on the docket, that's right, a New York mayor is charged with possession of crack cocaine. It turns out that an upstate New York mayor by the name of Tim Currier was busted after a brief police pursuit through the village near the Canadian border at about 12:25 yesterday afternoon. Now, Currier was targeted as part of an undercover investigation of drug sales and possession, according to the St. Lawrence County Sheriff. As Currier was fleeing, he is accused of chucking 1 gram of crack cocaine out the passenger window of his car. He was charged with criminal possession of a controlled substance, tampering with evidence, and failure to comply with a police officer. Not exactly the thing that we want our lawmakers to do, since they're the ones making the laws and ultimately telling everyone who's going to have them enforced. Needless to say, Mayor Currier has been the Messinas mayor since 2014. Before that, he was the chief of the Messina Police Department. We wish the good mayor luck in his case, and obviously we'll give him the presumption of innocence. But if he's using crack cocaine, he may want to seek some counseling as far as mitigation to present to the district attorney and his constituents before he goes to court. Now, next on the docket, Ghislaine Maxwell. That's right. She has now been in custody for 153 days, and she would like to go home before her trial, which is not scheduled until July of next year. Now, we've discussed this before. When one has a bond reduction hearing, you usually get one bite at the apple, unless there are changed circumstances. Changed circumstances do not necessarily include just the mere passage of time. So you can't say, well, Judge, you denied my bond 6 months ago. Nothing's really changed other than I've been in custody for 6 months ago. You don't get to do that. And if there are, in fact, changed circumstances, it's usually like, hey, Judge, the defendant was charged with a really serious crime, let's say murder. We don't believe that he actually took place in that murder, so therefore we're only going to charge him with maybe accessory. That is a changed circumstance. That would warrant a new bond reduction hearing. Well, Ghislaine Maxwell's attorneys have filed a motion asking the court to allow her to basically be released pending her trial in court, which is not set until July. The attorneys for Ghislaine Maxwell have asked the court to allow her to be released pending her trial in July. Needless to say, the United States attorneys don't believe that there should be a hearing at all regarding the bond reduction request. And the United States attorneys also believe that they would have to notify the victims, and the victims could be present at that hearing to object to any such bond reduction if the judge was even inclined to do so. The biggest gripe that Ghislaine Maxwell has is the fact that she has basically been in solitary confinement under the most restrictive conditions, where she is basically searched and monitored 24 hours per day. cameras follow her movement if she is permitted to leave isolation to basically meet with her attorneys. Her sleep is also disrupted every 15 minutes so that the correctional personnel at the detention center are assured that she has not committed suicide. The prosecutors in this case believe, and the court believed as well when they detained Ms. Maxwell, that she is an extreme risk of flight. It is very unlikely that Ms. Maxwell is going anywhere. I would be shocked if the court changed course. It's simply not going to happen. Additionally, if Ghislaine Maxwell was going to file for a bond reduction, what Ghislaine Maxwell's attorneys more than likely should have done when detention was originally ordered was that they should have appealed to the district court judge, appealing the magistrate court's decision granting detention. They didn't do that in this particular case, so now they're just simply asking for a reconsideration, saying, hey, please let her out. I think it's going to fail. Ms. Maxwell's not going anywhere. And she is up to 153 days in custody, and nothing has happened to her. Good for her. Next on the docket, the Too Tall Bandit strikes again. Now, the Too Tall Bandit struck again on November 27th, Black Friday, at the United Community Bank in North Carolina. This serial bank robber is now accused of at least 16 bank robberies in both Tennessee as well as North and South Carolina. The Too Tall Bandit, and I always love how the FBI comes up with the names for bank robbers that they don't seem to be able to locate. In this particular case, they describe the bandit as somewhere about 40 years of age, and they believe that he is about 6 feet 6 inches tall and weighs about 200 pounds. Recently had a client allegedly accused of robbing lots of banks, and they referred to him as the Powder Puff Bandit because there was allegations that he was using a lot of makeup to cover up facial tattoos. In this particular case, the robber also walks with a limp in his right leg and speaks with a very deep voice. No one has seen his face because he always wears a mask completely covering his face. Why is that important, ladies and gentlemen? Identification, right? How many times have we talked about the prosecution has to prove that it was the defendant? It's a little more difficult to prove when there's no picture from the bank, that there's an actual mask being displayed. It makes it much more difficult for the police to track somebody down. Obviously, makes it more difficult for somebody to say, hey, I know that guy. Well, if somebody does know a 6'6", 200-pound man that walks with a limp, guess what? If you call the FBI, you could be getting a $15,000 reward for your information if that suspect is in fact convicted. Not that we encourage anyone to rob banks, we certainly do not, but I always find it interesting, the bank robbers that get away for a while or do multiple banks, do it so nonchalantly, walk in, give me your money, walk out. Usually bank robberies are one of the dumbest crimes to be committed because there's so much surveillance, not only in the bank, but outside of the bank, and all of the cameras located with associated businesses. The fact that this guy has possibly 16 bank robberies under his belt, he's good. Next on the docket, Kyle Rittenhouse. Remember him? That's right. He had a preliminary hearing today, and guess what? Even though the defense argued that some of the lesser charges should be dismissed, the court denied that. What have we talked about so many times? The preliminary hearing is simply a screening device to see if there is probable cause. Now remember, charges have already been brought. A court has already found probable cause, but a preliminary hearing is that kind of extra screening device, particularly for people in custody, to make sure that there is sufficient evidence. Why? We don't want people to be held in custody or be charged with anything if the charges are not sufficient. But if we've talked about before, the standard of proof at a preliminary hearing is simply that of probable cause. Would a reasonable person believe that a crime was committed and that the charged defendant had something to do with it? Heck of a lot lower standard of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the standard at trial. Additionally, the prosecution has the benefit of all evidence being viewed in the light most favorable to the prosecution, drawing all inferences in their favor. I can tell you, in 25 years of practicing law, I can count of one time where the entire case was thrown out at a preliminary hearing. It was a jailhouse case where a shank was found in a mattress in an open squad bay. One of the elements were of the crime in that particular case was that the defendant knowingly possessed this illegal contraband. I asked the detective, hey, this mattress has lots of holes in it, correct? Did you personally go search this mattress before my client was assigned this particular bed space? No. Detective, sheriff, what evidence do you have that my client knowingly possessed the shank in that mattress? The officer responded, I don't have any. Everybody in the courtroom kind of looked at everybody. The judge says, case dismissed, walks off the bench, comes back out and said, as a judge who's been on the bench for 30 some years at that time, he said, I think that's the first time I've ever thrown a case out at preliminary hearing. So everybody always gets fired up about their preliminary hearings. The reality of it is the cases don't go away. And most of the time, if one is entitled to a preliminary hearing, because not all cases are required to have a preliminary hearing, an offer is made to waive that hearing. And it simply says, I'm not saying that I'm admitting guilt. It just simply says, I believe that there's enough evidence to go forward. So as the court stated to Mr. Kyle Rittenhouse and his attorneys, that the evidence and the charges will have to be challenged at trial. No surprise there whatsoever. Now, next on the docket, most people probably don't know Irene Bedard. Frankly, I didn't know about Irene Bedard until recently. Why? Because she was the voice in the Disney classic of Pocahontas. Well, wouldn't know her if I saw her walking down the street, but now maybe I would. And you'd probably know her because maybe she'd be intoxicated and assaulting somebody. Well, she was arrested twice in a matter of 3 days. First, she was arrested when police responded to the home of her ex-husband where she was wielding a belt and hollering at their 17-year-old son. Bedard allegedly kicked her ex-husband when he tried to restrain her. The actress then kicked the cops as they put her in their police car. Not good. Yes, she was only charged in that particular case with resisting arrest. If she was charged with assault with a peace officer, that usually carries mandatory prison in most jurisdictions. The common theme throughout Ms. Bedard's interaction with the police was apparently she was rather intoxicated. Fast forward a couple of days, and Ms. Bedard was rearrested after allegedly harassing a front desk clerk at the Beaver Creek Hotel. According to the police, they tried to de-escalate the situation, but when Ms. Bedard remained belligerent and actually charged at the police officers, that's right, she was arrested. Not really sure what's going on, Ms. Bedard, but one would possibly think, since both incidents, she appeared to be extremely intoxicated, that maybe she has an alcohol problem. We wish her well throughout her cases, and obviously we give her the presumption of innocence. Now, next on the docket, a quick recess. Ladies and gentlemen, please go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up for your background subscription service. You can anonymously search as many people as you like when you sign up, and you're going to get a report while you wait. And in that report, you're going to get information related to social media related to the person you're searching about, phone numbers, emails, criminal history, property records, marital records, divorce records, everything you need to know about somebody if you are going to be involved with them or engage in some sort of business relationship with them. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up. You'll be glad that you did. Now, next on the docket, you can't go to church naked. I don't care if you're going for services or if you're just trying to break into the church in the evening. Well, that's what a 26-year-old Arkansas woman allegedly did when she smashed a glass door and a window at a Hot Springs, Arkansas church, all doing it while completely nude. A probable cause affidavit says that the incident took place in late November, where deputies responded to a call about a disturbance between a man and a nude woman. When the police arrived, he spoke with the man and said that his girlfriend had left the house wearing only a jacket, which she obviously discarded. She walked to the church, which was about a quarter mile away. Meanwhile, a man flagged down another sheriff near the church and said he had seen a naked woman throwing something at glass doors at the church. When the police arrived, guess what? They heard more glass breaking, and it was in fact the young woman throwing a chair out the window, trying to get out of the church as well. Needless to say, it didn't take long to identify their suspect. That's right, because she was bleeding and she was completely naked. It's unclear why she attacked the church and why she wanted to go there naked. Needless to say, she was arrested and remains in jail on a $1,000 bond. This was not the first time that this young woman had been arrested. She was also arrested in Louisiana for kicking police officers when they tried to take her into custody. You just can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. Now, next on the docket, how many times have we said when the police come and arrest you and they want to interrogate you, they must advise you of your Miranda rights? And people should keep their mouth shut because anything they say can will be used against them. Well, what most people don't realize and understand is anything you say to anyone can be potentially used against you in the case against you as a statement against interest. It's an admission, ladies and gentlemen. Well, meet Michael Stephen Delgado Marin, 24, of Hollywood, Florida. He's facing charges of attempted first-degree murder, according to the booking records at the Broward County Sheriff's Office. According to arrest reports, Marin and his girlfriend of 3 years broke up about 5 months ago when she left Florida to visit her mother. They apparently reconciled. She returned to South Florida, but they began arguing again when the woman said she found drugs in their home. The argument escalated, and the woman told the police that Marin beat and choked her and also locked her in a bathroom. Obviously, we'll give Mr. Marin the presumption of innocence, but he sounds like quite a catch, does he not? The woman left to stay with a friend, but Marin showed up the next day looking for her, according to the police. Now, according to the police report, Marin allegedly showed the woman's friend a bullet with his ex-girlfriend's name written on it in green ink. That is what I'm going to do to her, according to the friend, is what Marin allegedly said. Both women reported the incident to police, and Marin was arrested and charged with 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He was released after posting a $40,000 bond about a week later. Marin surrendered to the police earlier this week when he learned that the district attorney had raised the charges up to attempted murder. Now, ladies and gentlemen, like we said, anything you say can and will be used against you. Certainly the statement of here's the bullet and then says this is what I'm going to do with her name on it. That is a statement, an admission by a party opponent in a case. It will be used against you. So thank you, Mr. Marin, for helping us explain this example. Hopefully you'll never get any firearms, and also hopefully you will let your ex-girlfriend live in peace, and hopefully the ex-girlfriend, please don't go back to Mr. Marin. I'm sure you can do better. Although you think he may be quite a catch, what have we said before? The Reich Law Firm rules of dating. Men often look for women hoping they'll never change, and women date men hoping that they will be able to change them. I don't think you're going to be able to change Mr. Marin. Move along. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, just when you thought it couldn't get any better than a drunk guy saying that he was Rick James' bitch, that's right. There's always something that tries to one-up it. Well, let's meet Aaron Dvorak, 38. He is charged with battery on a person 65 years or older, which is a felony, and he's ultimately had to post a bond of $10,000 after being released. Apparently, the police were called to a softball complex around 8:30 last night. And according to witnesses, Dvorak came to the plate during a softball game and complained about a strike call the umpire made. After an argument, Dvorak allegedly struck the umpire in the face, causing an injury to the umpire's lip. Now, you shouldn't go around punching people. You certainly shouldn't go around punching at-risk adults, which are usually people over about 55. In this particular case, the umpire was 65, and so that makes it a felony. And Mr. Dvorak, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the week, because if you really think that it's worth striking somebody over a softball game, that's right, a softball game for 38-year-old men, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the week. We'll give you the presumption of innocence. However, we will send you a mug, a Crime Talk mug, if you are in fact our dumb criminal contestant of the week winner. That's right. We'll find you, Mr. Dvorak. Shouldn't be hard. And if not, we can at least call your bail bondsman as well. Hey, thanks for watching. And if you would like to get your own merchandise, please do so. Hit the link below. Time to order that stuff now so it arrives just in time for Christmas. Have a great day. Thanks for joining us here on Crime Talk. We'll see you tomorrow.